مستعين وهو خير موفق ومعين. ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين، روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. We're talking about the lessons that we can learn from the event of Karbala that we can inshallah ta'ala apply to our lives today, so that come the advent of Imam Mahdi, the reappearance of Imam Mahdi inshallah ta'ala, we will be members of his army inshallah ta'ala. We mentioned three lessons yesterday, three elements, three factors. These were: one, obedience to the leader; two, basira; second was basira, to know what is going on around us, to know what is going on in the world, to be able to analyze the events, to see what is in the benefit of the enemy, what is to the disadvantage of the enemy. That's basira. And three, the fact that we cannot be neutral. There is no neutral ground. There is no middle ground. Now, a couple of points based on the Q&A we had last night, before I move on to the remaining lessons that we can draw from the event of Karbala. One is the fact that basira and obedience to the leader are not synonymous, are not coterminous, are not always together. Basira may exist, but the person that has basira might not have the taqwa or the willingness to obey the leader. Like Amras, like Muawiyah, like many people today who know what is going on in the world. They know what's going on in the world. They know whose side they should be on, but they're not on the right side. They're on the wrong side of the line. And on the other way around, obeying the leader doesn't always necessarily mean that one has basira. Just like after the revolution in Iran, a lot of people obeyed the leader of the time, Imam Khomeini, because of different reasons. There might have been sentimental reasons, there might have been emotional reasons. Just the fact that it was such a big movement and they were in Iran and the environment was such that it drove people to be obedient to Imam Khomeini. But then once the Imam died, because their obedience to the Imam was not based on basira, what happened after the Imam passed away? They neglected his successor. They disobeyed his successor. This happened for a lot of people in Iran, especially a lot of eminent people that had been in places of importance and places of significance in the government during the Imam Khomeini, during the life of the Imam Khomeini. Another question about neutral ground. What I meant yesterday was not that inshallah ta'ala, as I said, the reappearance of Imam Mahdi is near. When Imam Mahdi reappears, whoever is neutral, he's going to slaughter him. That's not what's going to happen. That's not what I meant. When I said we cannot be neutral in this fight between good and evil, means that we, if we want to be effective members of the army of Imam Mahdi, we have to choose one side. We're either with him or we're against him. And if we remain neutral, the danger is those who remain neutral, if they're at the wrong time, at the wrong place, they might end up in the army of the Tawut. That's what happens when you're neutral. Just as a lot of people at the time of Imam Hussein. Brothers and sisters, a lot of the people who went to Karbala to fight against Imam Hussein, none of them actually believed that they were going to end up killing Imam Hussein. 90% of them thought, well, we're neutral. We're not taking any sides. We're just going to go along with this. Okay? We're just going to go along with this, and somehow it's going to be solved. Somehow it's going to be solved. But then they were in the wrong time at the wrong place. What happened? They ended up actually killing Imam Hussein. That's what happens when we remain neutral. So we cannot remain neutral. It's not feasible. We have to take sides. So the first three lessons were obedience to the rahbar, basira, and the fact that we cannot remain neutral in the war between good and evil. The fourth lesson, which is probably the most prominent lesson of Karbala, is the lesson of self-sacrifice. If we want to do any good for the cause of good, for the cause of Allah, for the cause of the Ahlul Bayt, we have to be willing to make sacrifices. Whether small or great, we have to be willing to make sacrifices. And the scene of Karbala is full of instances of sacrifice. Full of manifestations of self-sacrifice. Of beautiful scenes of self-sacrifice. Just to remember the event of Karbala, let me read you one out of numerous instances of sacrifice. One instance that I find very captivating. One of the soldiers in the camp of Imam Hussein is Wahab ibn Janah Kalbi. He's there in Karbala with his wife and his mother. Try to picture how the situation is. You have the tiny army of Imam Hussein on one side, Imam Hussein, the Ahlul Bayt, the companions, the Ashab, their wives and children and mothers. Let me read you the Arabic. وخرج وهب بن جناح الكلبي فأحسن في الجلاد وبالغ في الجهاد. وهب بن جناح entered the scene of battle, and he fought bravely, and he fought to his utmost power. وكان معه امرأته ووالدته. His mother and his wife were with him. فَرَجَعَ إِلَيْهِمَا. After fighting for a good amount of time, he returned to his mother. And he said, وَقَالَ يَا أُمَّهُ أَرَذِيتَ. Are you satisfied with me, O mother? أَرَذِيتَ يَا أُمَّهُ أَرَذِيتَ أَمْ لَا. فَقَالَتِ الْأُمَّ مَا رَذِيتُ حَتَّى تُقْتَلْ بَيْنَ يَدَيَ الْحُسَيْنِ. I will not be satisfied until you are slain before Imam Hussein. But his wife was a little more sentimental. وقالت امرأته بالله عليك لا تفجعني بنفسك. Please do not bereave me. فقالت له أمه يا بني أعزب عن قولها. The mother said, oh my son, disregard what your wife is telling you. Go back to the battlefield. Go back and fight.
ورجع فقاتل بين يدي ابن بنت نبيك.
Go and fight for Imam Hussein.
تنل شفاعة جده
يوم القيامة. Until you reach, you receive the intercession of his grandfather.
فرجع فلم يزل يقاتل حتى قطعت يداه.
He went back and fought until both his hands were cut off.
فأخذت امرأته عمودا فأقبلت نحوه وهي تقول فداك أبي وأمي قاتل دون الطيبين حرم رسول الله.
His wife at this point wasn't going to stop him anymore. His wife herself took up arms, took up a rod that she found next to her, and went and joined her husband.
فأقبل كي يردها إلى النساء.
So she tried to help her husband, but then her husband wanted to return her to the camp.
وقالت لن أعود دون أن أموت.
The wife said, I will not return until I die before you.
فقال الحسين,
Imam Hussein is watching this whole scene.
فقال الحسين, جزيتم من أهل بيتي خيرا ارجعي إلى النساء رحمك الله.
O family of my companion, O family of Wahab, may God bless you. Please return. Please return to the ladies. And then Wahab continued to fight until he was martyred in the way of Imam Hussein. It's these things, these very telling and touching scenes, they must internalize in our own lives. And it was these scenes that actually led the Shia all over the world to victory. Brother Ali Radha, a couple days ago, was telling me how many years back when he went to Iran, during the time of the war between Iran and the regime of Saddam, he was witness to mothers of martyrs, mothers who had given their one or two of their sons in the war, but they were still willing to give more in the way of Islam. That's why Imam Khomeini said what? Imam Khomeini said, whatever we have, whatever victory we have is from Muharram va Safar. Whatever we have is from Haram and Safar. We have to be willing to make sacrifices if we want to make, if we want progress, if we want success, if we want victory.
لن تنالوا البر حتى تنفقوا مما تحبون.
You gotta be willing to give what you like, whether it's your life, whether it's your belonging. You have to want to give what you like, not what you can dispense with. So sacrifices can be small or they can be great. Sacrifices can be to your community. You want to make your community strong. You have to make sacrifices. You have to give to the community, not what you can dispense with. That's not sacrifice. Sacrifice is when you give something and that giving something causes you pain, causes you some distress. That's sacrifice. That's what we have to do if we want to make our community strong.
There are rawayat in Kitabul Kafi, Kitabul Iman wal Kufr.
There are several abwab, several chapters of Kitabul Iman wal Kufr that are related to حق المؤمن على المؤمن.
The rights that mu'mineen have in relation to one another.
There are multiple riwayat in which Imam Sadiq says, one of the rights, one of the things that you have to observe in relation to your brother in faith that you have to do ithar toward your brother. You have to have his concerns, give his concerns precedence over your own concerns. You have to favor him over yourself. And the companion asks Imam Sadiq, "Oh, Imam, what do you mean? Do you mean like if I give half of my wealth to my brother in faith, that is ithar?" Imam Sadiq says, "No, that's not ithar. That's insaf. You've only been fair. If you give half of your wealth to your brother in faith, you've only been fair. You haven't done ithar. You haven't sacrificed. If you give more than half of your wealth to your brother in faith, then you have done sacrifice. Then you have done ithar." That's the type of sacrifices we got to make if you want to have strong communities. Put in time for our communities. Put in time for our brothers in faith. So lesson number 4, self-sacrifice. Another very important instance of self-sacrifice, what happened in Lebanon? The 33-day war. How many Lebanese were killed? Over 1,000. How many Lebanese were martyred? Over 1,000. How many Israelis? Just about 100. Or thereabout. But who was victorious? The Lebanese. Why? Because the Lebanese are willing to sacrifice, but the Israelis are afraid for their lives. They're not willing to sacrifice. That's what makes a country, makes a nation victorious. To be willing to make sacrifices. So fourth lesson is self-sacrifice. The fifth lesson that we learn from Karbala is that the main obstacle in the way of making sacrifices, the obstacle in the way of obeying the Imam, the obstacle that prevents us, if we have basira, prevents us from applying that basira, is love of the world. Infatuation with the world. حُبُّ الدُّنْيَا. What does Imam Hussein tell us? إِنَّ النَّاسَ عَبِيدُ الدُّنْيَا وَالدِّينُ لَعِقٌ عَلَىٰ أَلْسَنَتِهِمْ يَحُوطُونَهُ مَا دَرَّتْ مَعَايِشُهُمْ وَإِذَا مُحِّصُوا بِالْبَلَاءِ قَلَّ الدَّيَّانُونَ. Most of us, unfortunately, most people, religion is only for times of luxury and leisure. But when crisis hits, we're not willing to exhibit, demonstrate, apply, exercise our faith. On the day of Ashura, in the heat of the battle, Imam Hussein is surrounded by the soldiers of Ubaidullah, Umar ibn Sa'd lanatullah alayhim. He's surrounded from all sides and he's trying to remember Imam Hussein. The whole fight, the whole cause is because he wants to guide the people. That's his only concern. Remember what I said about what the rights of the Ahlul Bayt are? Their rights, the rights of Amirul Mu'mineen that was usurped, is the right of the people. What they want is to guide humankind. So even in the heat of battle, when people are surrounding him to kill him, what he wants to do more than anything else is to guide the people. These people who are going to be doomed to hell by killing him, he's so merciful that he wants to guide them. So they're surrounding him. and he's trying to make him quiet. They're not listening. Imam Hussein says, فَقَدْ مُلَأَتْ بُطُونُكُمْ مِنَ الْحَرَامِ وَالطُّبَعَ عَلَىٰ قُلُوبِكُمْ. Your stomachs are filled with haram, with bribes, with money you've received through various means that have made you subservient, that have made you slavish toward the camp of Tawud, and now you're not willing to stand up for truth, and you're fighting the Waliullah. This is a great danger, brothers and sisters, especially in the West. It's a danger wherever we are, whether it's the East or the West, but especially the West. It's the country of materialism. You get consumed, you get assimilated. Everything in this culture, everything in this country cries out to you to forget about God, forget about the hereafter, forget about Ma'ad. It's not under your control. If you're not careful, if you're not very, very cautious, if you're not working on yourself, if you're not doing tazkiyah, you're by default will be drawn into it. By default. A couple years ago, I was here with my family, just for about a month. And when I went back to Iran, to Qom, to Hawza, I could conspicuously feel the difference. How, if you're not careful, life in America can draw you into itself. And then what happens when you're drawn in? When you're attached? You can't leave it. You're addicted. You're addicted. Well, we're addicted. This applies to everyone, myself included. I've heard a lot of brothers and sisters say, yeah, we really want to go to Iran. Yes, we really want to go to the Hoza. They just cannot disconnect from America. They like to go. They're addicted to this life. And it happens a lot of times. They go to Qom. I'm not saying everyone should leave here and go to Qom. That's not the point. But those who talk about it a lot, those who claim they want to do this a lot. They go to Qom, or to Najaf, or wherever it might be. But because they're addicted to this life, after a few months they leave. They can't take it. Now they might make up excuses, like the people in the Battle of Badr did, made up excuses for the Prophet. إِنَّ بُيُوتَنَا عَوْرَةً. Oh, the Prophet, our houses are left without a man. There's no one that we have to go back and take care of our houses. So what if the Imam appears? And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. When the Imam reappears, which inshallah is going to be very near, if we're so addicted to this life, are we actually going to be able to relinquish this life, to forgo this life, to join the Imam? That's a big question. It's very difficult. So what can we do? What can we do? We need to have the right worldview. Our worldview is the lens through which we see the world. Our worldview is the lens that shapes our perception of the world. We need to have the right worldview. We need to have the right perception about life. We need to have the right perception about death. We need to have the right perception about how the reality of things are.
إن هذه الدنيا لهو ولعب وإن الدار الآخرة لهي الحيوان.
Brothers and sisters, this life is just a game. That's what the Quran tells us. Just a game. And come the day of judgment, this whole span of life that we spent in this world will appear to be only moments. On the day of judgment, we will be asked, قَالَ كَمْ لَبِثْتُمْ فِي الْأَرْضَ عَدَدَ سِنِينَ. How many years did you spend on earth?
قَالُوا لَبِثْنَا يَوْمًا أَوْ بَعْضَ يَوْمٍ.
Only a day or part of a day, only a few hours. So is it worth it? That's the question we're going to ask ourselves. Is it worth it? All the hassle we go through, all the work that we do, and they just end up making us addicted to this world, and it's a vicious cycle. You work to eat, and then you eat to work. That's how it operates in America, right? What does Imam Hussein tell us? وَعَلَمُوا أَنَّ الدُّنْيَا حُلُوَهَا وَمُرَّهَا حُلُمْ وَلَنْتَبَاهَ فِي الْآخِرَةِ. Everything in this world is just dreams. In the hereafter, we're going to wake up. That's life. And what is death? What is death? Imam Zainul Abidin, alayhi salatu wa salam, we gotta learn from these things, brothers and sisters. These aren't just to read, to be repeated every year, and without them making any impression on our lives. We gotta learn from these. قال علي بن الحسين لما اشتد الأمر بالحسين بن علي بن أبي طالب. As the day progressed, as things became worse and worse, as the pressure on Imam Hussein increased, نظر إليه من كان معه فإذا هو بخلافهم. His own companions looked at Imam Hussein and they noticed that Imam Hussein is not like themselves. لأنهم كلما اشتد الأمر تغيرت ألوانهم وارتعدت فرائصهم ووجبت قلوبهم. As the situation became worse and harder, they were good people. They were fighting on the side of Imam Hussein against the enemies of Imam Hussein. But still, their faith wasn't that strong. So when it became harder, they would feel the fear. But Imam Hussein was not like that. وَكَانَ الْحُسَيْنُ وَبَعْضُ مَنْ مَعَهُ مِنْ خَصَائِصِهِ تُشْرَغُ أَلْوَانُهُمْ. And this is why we need to be careful about what the descriptions that we say about Imam Hussein and his family. Sometimes in our latmiyas, in our rodas, in our the things that we say, the poems and poetry that we say about Imam Hussein, instead of actually commemorating the name of Imam Hussein, we're belittling Imam Hussein. The sentences that we put in the mouths of Imam Hussein, making Imam Hussein look like ourselves, that's not how Imam Hussein is. We need to represent Imam Hussein. We need to show Imam Hussein as he actually was.
وَكَانَ الْحُسَيْنُ وَبَعْضُ مَنْ مَعَهُ مِنْ خَصَائِصِهِ تُشْرَغُ أَلْوَانُهُمْ وَتَهْدَأُ جَوَارِحُهُمْ وَتَسْكُنُ نُفُوسُهُمْ.
As the situation became harder, their faces shone with happiness. Their hearts became more and more peaceful in the remembrance of God.
فَقَالَ بَعْضُهُمْ لِبَعْضٌ انْظُرُوا لَا يُبَالِي بِالْمَوْتِ.
Companions would say, look at him.
He doesn't care about maut. فَقَالَ لَهُمُ الْحُسَيْنِ Ma Hussein would say, صَبْرًا بَنِ الْكِرَامِ فَمَا الْمَوْتِ إِلَّا قَنْطَرَةٌ تَعْبُرُ بِكُمْ عَنِ الْبُؤْسِ وَالضَّرَّاءِ إِلَى الْجِنَانِ الْوَاسِعَةِ وَالنَّعِيمِ الدَّائِمَةِ. For the faithful, death is but a bridge that takes you from this world to the bounties of paradise. In fact, on the night of Ashura, the night preceding the day of Ashura, there is a very interesting dialogue that goes on between two of the companions of Imam Hussein. These two are Burayr ibn Khudayr al-Hamdani and Abdul Rahman ibn Abdul Rabbih al-Ansari. They're standing together, and Burayr starts teasing and laughing. And Abdul Rahman says, "What's going on? It seems like you're out of your mind. You don't know what's going on. We'll be martyred tomorrow." And Burayr says, "Yes, in fact, I do know what is going on. And that's why I'm so happy. I know tomorrow we'll be slaughtered in the way, we'll be martyred in the way of Imam Hussein. And we'll be taken to paradise. These are things we need to learn from." Those in Iran who were present during the war, the 8-year war. And by the way, the reason that you might say, okay, why is Sheikh alluding to the war in Iran? Because it's one of a kind. The experience that Iran had and the experience that Lebanon and now Iraq is having are things that in these recent phenomena and events, we are seeing in reality and in practice the things that the Ahlul Bayt told us, the things that were read from the Ahlul Bayt, they are actually being played out, and they were played out during the revolution in Iran and during the war. Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, on one account said, "Some of these soldiers that I see, when I look at their faces, the luminosity, the spirituality that I see there in their faces is the same luminosity that I see in the faces of mystics who've been practicing spirituality for over 70 years. That's the type of environment that we had in Iran. So the people who actually experienced the war in Iran, they say that some of the more spiritual people, when there was a battle on the next day, there were some figures that we would see, they were more exuberant than everyone else. Their faces were more luminous than everyone else. It was precisely those people that we martyred the following day. They learned from Imam Hussein. And we must learn from Imam Hussein too. So the question is this. It's difficult. We're stuck in this life. We're addicted. We aspire, we like to change our perception of things, but it's difficult. How do we do it? There are a few simple steps. They're simple, but they're very decisive. They're very important. And if we want to make any progress, if we want to follow in the path of Imam Hussein, we must do these things. The first is taqwa. Taqwa, taqwa, taqwa. Doing wajibat, refraining from muharramat. You might say, "Shaykh, why are you repeating this so many times? Why are you repeating taqwa so much? Why don't you say something new?" Ayatollah Khushwaqt rahmatullah alayh, the late spiritual master who passed away a couple years ago, in his classes, whatever question he would be asked, "I have this spiritual problem. I'm plagued with jealousy. How can I cure myself?
my shahwa is too strong. How can I cure myself? His answer always would be taqwa, taqwa, taqwa. And some people would be pissed off and they would leave. Okay, why doesn't he tell us something new? But that is in fact the only way forward, taqwa. It's simple, but that's the only way. And unfortunately, most of us, we don't do it and we're looking for something more advanced. But that's the way forward. Observe taqwa. And one very important component of taqwa is our salat, our prayers, brothers and sisters. Especially here in the West, it might be more difficult, but it's extremely advantageous. Doing our prayers on time, just this very, very simple step. إِنَّ الصَّلَاةَ تَنْهَى عَنَ الْفَحْشَاءِ وَالْمُنْكَرَ وَلَذِكْرُ اللَّهِ أَكْبَرَ. You might have heard this before. Allama Qadhi specifically stated this, and this has been confirmed by Ayatollah Bahjat. You can find the clip online. The video is online. Allama Qadhi says, if you persist in praying your prayers on time, those who are looking for ways for spiritual perfection, please listen. If you persist in praying on time, all the salawat, praying on time, and you don't reach high levels of spirituality, you can curse me. You can do la'an to me. That's the spiritual effect of just praying on time. Just that one simple action that we can do. Praying on time. And last, the last step we can take, and this will be the end of my speech, inshallah ta'ala. The last step is to control ourselves, to be content with less than what we can have. That's a huge practice that we can do. Be content with less than what we have. In America, the culture is the culture of consumerism. You're always being enticed and goaded and compelled to go and buy and buy, and you make up excuses. I need this, I need that, I need this, I need an iPhone 6, I need that, I need a new car, I need new shoes. Be content with less, even if you have the money. Thank you. Even if you have the money, be content. You want to go and buy something? Stop and think. Don't let that habit get the better of you. Don't let yourself be addicted to this culture of consumerism. There's a very beautiful riwayah, very instructive riwayah, from Salman al-Farsi, or Salman al-Muhammadi, as the Prophet called him. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Salman, brothers and sisters, was the most perfect companion of the Prophet. There's a story related in our credible books of hadith where Abu Dharr is with Salman at Salman's house, and Salman is cooking something. He has the pan on fire, and there's some stew that Salman is cooking. As they're speaking, the pan flips over. To Abu Dhar's amazement, nothing spills out. The stew remains in. And again, to Abu Dhar's amazement, Salman takes the burning hot pan, puts it back on the flame. And then they continue speaking. Again, it flips over. Nothing spills out. Again, Salman picks it up, hot burning pan, puts it back. And their conversation is over. Abu Dhar leaves and he goes, I forget whether it's Amir al-Mu'mineen or the Prophet, I think Amir al-Mu'mineen. Goes to Amir al-Mu'mineen. As soon as Amir al-Mu'mineen sees him, without Abu Dhar saying a word, Amir al-Mu'mineen says, what's going on, Abu Dhar? What's bothering you about Salman? Abu Dhar says, I saw something from Salman that I think he's a sorcerer or witch. And if someone were to go and kill him right now, I would say we've been relieved of the kafir in this world. Amir al-Mu'mineen tells him, in fact, Salman, Babullahi fil ard. Salmanu Babullahi fil ard. Man arafahu kana mu'mina. Allahu Akbar. Salman is the gate to God on earth. Whoever acknowledges his status is mu'min. Waman ankarahu kana kafira. And whoever does not accept his status is a kafir. Salman was not a Muslim. He wasn't born a Muslim. He was born a Zoroastrian. He was born in Iran, a non-Muslim, a kafir. Pursued the truth, ended up in Hijaz, and finally embraced Islam. That means it's possible. For us, it's possible. Someone who's not a Muslim, who's had... So I remember in the classes with Atullah Khushraq, some of the brothers would ask, is it possible, like, people who weren't Muslim, they've had haram food, how is it possible that they could ever become spiritually perfect? And he would say, look at the example of Salman. If you follow the path of truth, يُكَفَّرْ عَنْهُ سَيِّئَاتِهِمْ. God will remove all the veils, all the filth from sin that has accumulated. If Salman could do it, we could do it too. It's difficult. But the example of Salman shows that it can be done. Someone who's not Muslim reaches such a level of spirituality where the Prophet says, or Amir al-Mu'mineen says, بَابُ اللَّهِ فِي الْأَرْضِ. He is the gate of God. مَنْ عَرَفَهُ كَانَ مُؤْمِنًا. Now Salman, at his deathbed, his friends that were with him, noticed that he was not happy. He was unhappy about something. وَتَحْصُرُ سَلْمَانُ الْفَارْسِي رَضْوَانُ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ عِنْدَ مَوْتِهِ. He was unhappy. He was at his deathbed and was unhappy. فَقِيلَ لَهُ عَلَى مَا تَأَسُّفُكَ يَا أَبَا عَبْدِ اللَّهِ. His kunya was Abu Abdullah. Salman's kunya was Abu Abdullah. He was asked, Abu Abdullah, what bothers you? قَالَ لَيْسَ تَأَسُّفِي عَلَى الدُّنْيَا. I am not unhappy because I'm leaving this world. I'm actually happy because of leaving this world. What bothers me is this. وَلَكِنْ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ عَهِدَ إِلَيْنَا وَقَالَ لِتَكُنْ بُلْغَةُ أَحَدِكُمْ كَزَادِ الرَّاكِبِ. Salman says, the Prophet said, and this is a lesson for myself, this, I'm telling this to myself first and foremost and then to you. Salman says, the Prophet told us, your belongings should be like the provisions of someone who's journeying, someone who's traveling, not any more than that. وَأَخَافُ أَن نَكُونَ قَدْ جَاوَزْنَا أَمْرَ. I'm afraid that I have not lived up to what the Prophet told me. وَحَوْلِ هَذِهِ الْأَسَاوِدِ. With these things that I have around me, I'm afraid I have not lived up to what the Prophet told me. And then the guy who asked, he said, I looked around him, there was only a pillow and a bowl and a sword. A pillow and a bowl and a sword. And Salman says, I'm afraid I have not lived up to what the Prophet told me. Compare that with our lives, how we're living. We pray to God by the right of the Ahlul Bayt, by the right of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn, by the right of Hazrat Abbas, by the right of Hazrat Zainab, by the right of Ali Asghar, by the right of Ali Akbar, that he may cure our hearts, inshallah ta'ala. That he may relieve us of our spiritual diseases, inshallah ta'ala. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. It is the sixth night of Muharram when we are fast approaching Ashura. Let's give our salam to Imam Hussein. As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah wa ala al-arwah allati halat bifna'ik. Alayka minni salamullah أبدا ما بغيت وبغي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. يا الله يا أبا عبد الله صلى الله عليك. Every moment in Karbala,
Every moment in Karbala was a difficult moment for Abu Abdullah. He was losing his beloved companions, his loyal companions. He was losing his Ahlul Bayt, his brothers, his nephews. One of the very painful moments in Karbala was the moment that Qasim ibn al-Hasan came to the battlefield. He was a young boy, a young teenager. Look at your own sons. Imagine your own sons, your own teenage sons in Karbala. My son is 12 years old. What would I do? How would I feel if my son was in such a situation? And in fact, for Imam Hussein, the case of Qasim was even more difficult, because Qasim was the orphan of his brother, his beloved brother, Imam Hassan. Qasim came to the battlefield, but because he was so young, the body armor was too big for him. It's even possible that the sword that he was wearing on him would drag on the ground. Imagine a young boy with a sword that drags on the ground, coming to the help of his uncle. He didn't have to do that, he was too young to fight. But they are the children of Ali ibn Abi Talib. They cannot stand back and watch. His uncle has been so good to him all these years, since the death of his father. He goes to the battlefield. قال الراوي وخرج غلام وكان وجهه شقة A young boy came out, his face so beautiful. فجعل يقاتل He fought, فضربه ابن فضيل لعنة الله عليه على رأسه ففلقه He fought until this enemy of God struck him on his head and split his head in two. فوقع الغلام لوجهه وصاح يا عما He fell on his face and he cried out, Oh uncle, oh Hussein. فجلى الحسين كما يجلى الصقر. Imam Hussein ran as fast as he could and he killed the enemy of God that had struck and hit his beloved nephew. Moments passed, and as the dust around them settled, the narrator says, the reporter says, قال الراوي وانجلت الغبرة The dust settled. فرأيت الحسين قائما على رأس الغلام He's standing by the head of his nephew. يا يا الله وهو يفحص برجليه القاسم
is scraping the ground with his feet in pain
والحسين يقول بعدا لقوم قتلوك curse be upon the people that killed you ومن خصمهم يوم القيامة جدك وأبوك
ثم قال عز والله he said oh Qasim it's very difficult for me that you cry for me that you require my help but I cannot give it to you
عز والله على عمك أن تدعوه فلا يجيبك أو يجيبك فلا ينفعك صوته هذا يوم والله كثر واتره وقل ناصره على لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون